We're going to be talking about this throughout the duration of the program, is that the CPS, a lot of the schools have kicked off, and remote learning is the way that it is happening. 312-981-7200. If you've got your experience, are you going back to school today? Is it working out? Are you confused by some of the technology, mystified by some of it, or just excited to get it going? And on the line with us, we've got education reporter for the Chicago Sun-Times, the one and only Nader Issa. Nader, welcome to WGN.
Thanks, Dan. Thanks for having me.
So this is, you know, as an education reporter, you're always writing about this, and a lot of times it's, I don't want to say similar situations, but a lot of the same stuff that you hope just goes well. If it's not broke, don't fix it, and sometimes there's changes in curriculum, or sometimes there's maybe a crisis or a scandal here or there. This is kind of the biggest thing I could even imagine, you know, where the entire educational system, not only for Chicago, but around the country, is adjusted, impacted, affected. So give your thoughts. I know you've been covering this really closely. Talk about the kickoff for the school year.
Yeah, I was actually talking to a principal a couple of days ago at an elementary school in a Little Village, and she put it in an interesting perspective and said, I'm optimistic. I'm ready to tackle whatever challenges there are. I do have some concerns, but that's just like the start of any school year. And that sort of made me realize that, I mean, every school year has its challenges. Every school year can start off bumpy, people are going to have to overcome certain obstacles. But this year it's sort of magnified a lot, right? I mean, kids are at home. This has never happened before. In the spring, kids were at home, teachers were at home, but this is the first time that they're actually trying to put in a full-fledged remote learning experience. In the spring, obviously, we know that was on the fly. So, yeah, it's going to be challenging. I mean, parents, students, teachers that I've talked to over the past few days, there's just a lot of anxiety all around. People don't know what to expect. They're worried about internet cutting out. It seems like laptops and computers aren't as big of a problem as they were in the spring. A lot of devices have been passed out, but internet's probably one of the chief concerns. And just, you know, having that school experience, being with your teachers, with your classmates, no one knows what to expect.
It's one of those things where you know that there's going to be some changes, kind of getting the kids up to speed. And then we've got the technology issues, and we're going to talk a little bit about that. One of the things from your article that I thought was interesting is that it is a little bit different. If you're used to, you know, conducting a class and teaching in one certain way, and then now you have sort of this camera built into it, you think it'd be almost easier, but it said, you know, like they're thinking they're ready to produce it like the Emmys. Have you talked to some of the teachers where even them, just as far as changing what it is, as far as maybe their conversational style or the ways that they're able to present things in an entirely different format, not actually physically in the room?
Yeah, I mean, you think about a typical classroom, right? The teacher's at the front, and then she might walk around, he might walk around and go talk to different students, check in on them, look over their shoulder, all that type of stuff. That's not happening behind a computer screen, right? And so you're sort of having to put on a little bit more of a performance, which it's funny that quote you mentioned, the teacher said she has a few monitors set up and she feels like she's producing the Emmys. I mean, it almost is like a performance. You're trying to keep the students engaged. You're trying to make sure you see all the students' faces. They're paying attention and they're absorbing the material that you're teaching them. It's way harder to do over a computer screen than it is in person, where you're able to check in on those students. Students have that direct feedback from teachers. I mean, it's just a whole new world for teachers and students and parents.
I think it's so crazy that we even think about this, right, Nader? But just the entertainment value that you need to build into things. Think about what you're competing with. You're competing with, you know, everything that's on YouTube and television and all those mobile devices and everything that kids are looking at. And you don't have that captive audience that you do when you're the teacher and you're physically there. And so you have to. We've got three kids doing remote learning, you know, today, and you constantly have to wrangle them and kind of get them back in front of those monitors. And it's, I don't know if that's something that we can expect out of the teachers. I didn't necessarily see that coming, but they have to build in something to keep the attention there based on what the kids are used to.
Yeah, and there's been some creative stuff that teachers have come up with. I mean, even dating back to the spring, I was talking to some teachers, and I think one of them said she would start off her class every day with a little bit of a scavenger hunt for a few minutes. just to get like kids moving, get them engaged, have something fun for them to want to pay attention. And then she'd move into her lesson for the day. Like she'd tell them, go around the house, find this or that. And I mean, that is something that teachers are actively planning and actively building into their lessons. Because yeah, their kids now are at home. They have a million things they could be distracted with. It's no substitution for being in a classroom with a teacher where the teacher can sort of wrangle you back in and say, hey, let's redirect our attention. Right. At home, I mean, parents can do that, right? But ideally, but it's just for working class families, parents who also have to be on their computer working, or parents who are essential workers who can't even really be at home. It's just a tough situation because you can't keep checking in with your students every few minutes. So it's definitely going to be a challenge.
Yeah, you don't have all of those normal threats that you can use too. You threaten them with detention, or you've got to do this, or you go down to the principal's office. You know, none of the tools in the tool belt for, I think, you know, like school period correction are at your disposal. I want to let the listeners know we're talking with Nader Issa. He is educational correspondent, writer for the Chicago Sun-Times. And you know that, and we talked about kind of getting a pass. Everybody got a pass at the end of the spring, and because people didn't necessarily know what was going to happen. We see all these different events sort of go by the wayside or wait a little bit of time before they postpone this or that. And so at what point through your kind of research or those conversations did everybody make that kind of real commitment? Because I think probably people were hoping that, you know, the curve would be flattened and it would be, just wouldn't be the same issue, right? We can get sort of, at least by the time you looked at the fall, get back to regular schooling. At what point did they say, we just got to go all in on the remote thing?
Yeah, I mean, I think for a little while people were sort of holding out hope, even if they deep down knew that it wasn't going to happen. But CPS, we know, central office, the CPS officials spent a good amount of time trying to really put together a quality hybrid learning plan, the one that we saw unveiled a couple months ago, where kids would be in school 2 days a week, would be at home the other 3 days. A lot of time was spent on that. And I think about a month ago, things sort of changed. People realized, hey, the cases aren't going down to the level that we need them to, and let's just be safe from the start. And everyone knows, I mean, the Chicago Teachers Union, for example, was really, really pushing for full remote learning. But even they were saying remote learning is not perfect. Like, there are going to be challenges. There are people with food insecurity, with housing insecurity, working class families, again, like I said, whose parents can't spend the time that they need to ensure that their kids are learning virtually like they should be in classes. And there are challenges, but safety and health are the priority. And so I think about a month ago, things started to switch and everyone started gearing up for what I think was coming all along, which is full remote learning that we're seeing today.
It's interesting to see what is necessary. You can have the will to do it and the idea to do it, but 300,000 students, one of the largest school systems in the country, it's not as easy, especially when you've got those moving parts and logistics on whether it's access to Wi-Fi or whether it's, you know, some of the laptops and some of those things. And, you know, when people think, I think in general, a lot of our listening audience may think, well, we're all sort of connected, right? Whether it's on our phones or whatever. So when they knew that they had to kind of make this available to the vast majority of the student body, what is sort of that connectivity or that Wi-Fi footprint in a lot of the neighborhoods for CPS? Was it something when they finally, you know, when they got into it, like, geez, we've got a lot of work to do? Or was it with a little tweak here and there, we can get everybody connected?
Yeah, so, I mean, about connectivity, you'd think, right, that we would have a lot of families connected, but that's just not the reality, especially in lower-income neighborhoods where families might not have the resources. I mean, they can't afford a Comcast bill every month, or even for some undocumented families, they're worried about having to provide personal information to get signed up for internet. And so those are all concerns, like real, real concerns that people have. And the internet part of it is something that has started more recently this summer. Again, I'm not sure the exact date, but about a month and a half ago, the mayor and CPS announced the Chicago Connected program. where a lot of philanthropists, including Ken Griffin, Illinois' richest man, I think he gave $7 million to this program. And the goal is to get 100,000 families signed up for free high-speed internet in their homes. And so it's paid for by the city. They'll have an internet service provider come set it up at home. And so far, the pledge was 100,000 students. So far, about 25,000 have registered. And so it's not a perfect estimate, but it's safe to say there's around 75,000, maybe a little lower. There are quite a few students who still do not have quality internet access at home. Now, they might have internet, but it can be slow. It can cut out. We're talking high-speed, reliable internet, like you really need for a good experience. Computers, on the other hand, that's sort of been figured out in the spring after schools closed. I mean, we all know that was a huge problem. There were hundreds of thousands of kids without computers. The district CPS gave out about 128,000 of them in the spring.
Jeez.
And then about 17 to 18,000 now in the weeks leading up to this new school year. So as far as computers go, that should be set. There are even families with multiple children who were able to get a laptop or an iPad for each child. So it's the focus is more on internet.
Yeah, it's one of the things. Think too is kind of a big picture and down the road in the future is that put this in now and kind of think of it as infrastructure and stuff that you can use not only to get past, kind of bridge the gap through this situation, but be a part of maybe an expanded, you know, opportunity for learning for CPS in a bunch of different ways. Nader, if you could hold on for a second, I'd love to ask you your thoughts on kind of the big picture and sort of the future of some of where the kind of the pieces that are being put in place at CPS now are going to manifest and kind of show themselves in the future, even after the pandemic. So if you can hold on, we'll get back to you right after this quick break, but keep it here. It's Dane on 720 WGN. 720 WGN, and we are back continuing our conversation with Sun-Times education reporter Nader Issa. Nader, welcome back, and I want to let Joan know also, who's going to talk a little bit about Sylvan Learning Centers, to stay on the line. We'll get with that as one of the options that are going on out there today. And so Nader, here's one of the things. As people have to, in sort of the immediate future, invest in what is really tech infrastructure for the school system, you know, when the smoke clears and the pandemic is over, I see being able to, and I want to get your thoughts on being able to use some of this technology and sort of this kind of crash course in remote learning, maybe for other things, whether it's to be able to extend the teachers or instructors that are able to kind of interact with the students here, or maybe even for after school programs, you know, ways that people can kind of make use of all that is being done to kind of bridge that gap today.
Yeah, there's definitely going to be an improvement whenever we get back, whether it's next school year, sometime in the middle, the year after that. I know parents don't want to hear that, but whenever it is that CPS gets back to school, there's definitely going to be a benefit of having all these laptops and this internet infrastructure. But I think it's also important to keep this in context, which is CPS was starting in a huge deficit. They're compared to districts in the area, in the suburbs. I mean, CPS just did not have the technology it needed. And I think we realized once schools shut down in the spring that, wow, 150,000 kids can't access a computer or internet from home. I mean, that should not be happening. And so CPS was in a deficit, and now they've sort of recovered. They have the laptops, the computers, the iPads that they need. I think going forward, it's going to be about sustaining that. We've already heard there are some devices that aren't the best. They maybe break down a little bit, or they're a little on the older side. So actually making that investment a key part of CPS going forward, technology-wise, internet, all of that, that's going to be important if really any changes in lessons are going to be made, for example, where kids can do the work on their computers from home that we're seeing now.
It is Nader Issa. He is an education reporter for the Chicago Sun-Times. Before we let you go, Nader, let the listeners know how they can keep up with all of your important work and maybe follow you on social media and all the ways that you're active.
Sure. If just check out suntimes.com. There's an education page on there. You'll see all of our education coverage, not only mine, but anyone else's at the Sun-Times. And then on Twitter, you can search my name. I don't think there are too many other people with my name around, so should be one of the first ones, and you can check me out there.
Appreciate the important work you're doing, especially on this big day. Thanks for jumping on the show today.
Thanks for having me.